is for the many ones you use. V is very, very surprisingly momentary. E is even more tools. By the day, you can explore its tools. They're made for me and you. Welcome to Tools Day.
Although that was not the Nat King Cole version. It's like the
it's a Tools Day version.
Ah, okay.
Special edition.
Okay, all right.
Welcome to our podcast. It's a 20-minute podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we have a variety show.
Hooray!
So, what do we mean by variety show?
It's just basically a collection, a hodgepodge, a smorgasbord of our...
Word.
I love that word. of tools we use every day, which maybe don't fall into any particular bucket, but we still love them anyways.
Yeah, or sometimes we record a show and immediately after we're like, oh, I completely forgot about this tool. So this is the show that we're going to talk about the tools for.
Yeah. Okay.
So, variety show.
Variety show. Okay. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'll kick us off. So recently on Twitter, I tweeted a picture of my dev tools in Chrome, on the sidebar. And I totally forgot that I had installed a theme with this Chrome extension called Author Settings. So it allows you to customize that HTML tidbit on the side, lets you all the property pages, the whole theme is customizable, and you can do dark themes, light themes. One
is it a dark theme? I didn't see it.
Oh no, it's not a dark theme, but this is what I'm about to explain why.
Okay,
because there's a little flash, you see a flash of the style happening from the Google theme to your theme. You get really used to it, but at first it's definitely there. So I recommend a light background, a white background, so it's not as
jarring.
Yeah. So with my theme, I use Input Mono.
Of course.
Which is my favorite font right now.
Using it everywhere.
Yeah.
But right now, it's been my favorite font of the last year.
It's my favorite monospace font. But that could change next year. It could change next week. Who knows?
That's more of my thing. Every week changing more than yours.
Well, you change your module loaders every week.
Listen. It's fine.
So I use that size 11 and the Google color scheme, which is not the Google Chrome color scheme. It's a different color scheme.
Is it the material scheme-ish type? It's Google.
Probably.
Okay.
It's not exactly the imperial colors that I recognize, but yeah, it's good. It's a solid one.
Nice.
So check out Author Settings, the Chrome extension.
Okay. Well, I'll go next then, because that's how it works. I'll also do a Chrome extension. This one is called ZenHub. It's not as sexy as yours. It's actually a project management tool and more than anything else, but it plugs straight into GitHub. It's a Chrome extension. And one thing you find sometimes when you're developing with big projects and a lot of people is that the issues in GitHub is just not enough to actually organize your project. You're like, okay, I have 15,000 issues and I have no way to prioritize which goes first, which goes second, which goes third. And so it kind of brings in this thing called a Kanban board. And if you've used Trello before, or Jira as some of our more enterprise-y type people, or RTC, IBM. I take back RTC because RTC does not have Kanban boards. But I'm sure maybe something else. All right, no, let's move on. Kanban boards are basically these little work streams where you have these columns that says one says to do, the next says in progress, and it says done. And so ZenHub integrates straight into your GitHub experience.
Right, the GitHub UI.
Yeah.
Transmogrified.
It is something beautiful. No, it was already beautiful, GitHub. We love it. But it adds this extra tab, basically, inside of your GitHub repo.
It's the project management features that you need in GitHub that exist there.
Yeah, it's the hidden features that you never knew you wanted until you have them, and then you're like, what happened, GitHub? Why isn't this already there?
I like ZenHub a lot, too. I like it a lot more than using Jira, because that's a whole separate experience.
Yeah, the cool part is that it's just part of your repo.
And it's very simple.
It's so simple. It plugs straight in, and it just makes life easy. It has this great, for those of you who are really into the agile methodologies and workflows, it has the burn down charts that your PMs love to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I can toss some more buzzwords, but I don't know them that well.
Agile cloud, changing the
cognitive
state of
being
with agile cloud.
ZenHub is my variety show number one of tools.
Nice. I also like What's it called? Waffle.io.
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 which is similar. It integrates with your GitHub repositories and it creates a Trello-like experience where you can just move things around, have conversations there, tag people, and it just it integrates with GitHub, so it makes the changes on GitHub as well.
Speaking of Trello, this is not related per se, but it is a tool that they just released. So Fog Creek, which is the people who make Trello and their other products, which I don't remember, just released something called HyperDev. And it's this new thing where you go to hyperdev.com, you sign up, and they make a new VM, and they make a new...
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm really bad at explaining this because I just found out about this.
You go on the site and it already has a website like address for you.
Right, yeah.
It's a VM that you can control. I'm a little confused about that because what's the point? Like when I leave the site, it's gone.
No, it's still there. It's there. Like, it
exists on the internet, but it doesn't exist in my access anymore.
It does. Well, I think there's some way you can access it, but it's like Google Docs for coding. So you can add your teammates onto the same thing. And you both can collaboratively code.
Like GitHub?
Yes, but real time. So it's not Git. So Git is version control.
I get that a lot of people are making a big fuss about this. Like, this is really cool. Like, the collaborative code, that's, like, really awesome. The one thing I'm concerned about is all these people are going to go on the site, and there's going to be all of these VMs spun up that are never used because they're just wanting to, like, look at what it is.
Well, they shut them down if you don't use it within 24 hours or something. Or put it to sleep. It's like the same thing that Heroku does where they spin up a VM when you make it, but then
With Heroku, you have to have it sleep 6 hours every day.
Yeah, yeah. Bluemix, by the way, doesn't do that, so...
Hey!
Hey, yo!
There you go.
Anyways, shout out to my company. What's up?
Neither does Dio. okay, so...
I've been a Dio customer for 5 years?
Yeah, a long time.
I love Dio.
It's been around for a while.
Yeah. Anyways,
We just opened in Bangalore, literally 3 days ago. Our data center there.
Well, congrats.
I think it's a pretty big deal. It's like, you know, there's...
It's worldwide?
It's worldwide. I mean, okay, so this is totally a tangent, but internet in India is terrible. It is like well known that it is one of the worst connections in the world and just expensive, so expensive for what you're getting. And now that there's a server like center there, a data center, I mean, it's going to be much faster for them to access data since it's much closer than any of the other ones like New York or London. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So I visit India every 4 years or so. So my family lives in this place called Chennai, Madras, South India. And we used to go there every 4 years or so. And I remember hitting up an internet cafe. It says broadband, but what it actually means is like 256K. and so this is back when, you know, this was only like 8 years ago. So broadband in the US 8 years ago was still pretty fast. It was like 20 times that. 256K is just barely better than a dial-up internet. So that's kind of the state of Indian internet as I remember it.
From what I hear from people who live there right now, it's still terrible and it's so expensive in terms of like minimum wage to internet speed costs.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember that tweet you got like 4 months ago.
Yeah, so I was at a Google conference.
Googleio?
It wasn't Googleio. It was a Chrome Dev Summit. And there was a great talk about the speed and cost of internet in India and other nations that aren't as advanced as the United States when it comes to internet. And so I tweeted like the statistics and it was like, I don't remember what the numbers were, but it was astronomical.
Like one page cost this amount of money.
Yeah, I think it was an hour of minimum wage labor is 15 pages that you can load.
Right, yeah.
And so I tweeted that and like a lot of people fought me about it. They're like, I don't believe you. Like, this is ridiculous. And then one person who lived in India like sent me a picture of their internet bill.
Yeah.
And they're like, yes, this is the minimum wage. This is my internet bill.
Yeah.
It was eye-opening.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a long tangent. An important tangent. Long tangent. So performance is important.
Yep.
Be cognizant. So you talked about a product management tool. And so I want to talk about product management tool too.
Okay.
It's called Jell, J-E-L-L. And I just discovered it when I started at DigitalOcean. And it's awesome. It's like basically a stand-up replacement. And it lets you... write like what you did yesterday, what you're planning to do today, and then check it off as you go.
Oh.
And then like you can have a to-do list like for things that you want to like add on like later. And then the next day when you go to add your update, because you update every day.
Yeah.
Everything that you crossed off is automatically in the what I did yesterday.
Wow.
It's so nice because it keeps you accountable. Like, there's a list of things I plan to do today. I can refer to it. I can see what all my teammates are doing. I can see the history of what I did.
Does it integrate into Slack or something?
It does. There's a Slack bot, too. So we ended up turning the Slack bot off because it was like every time you cross something off, it would, like, say in Slack.
Did it give you, like, a well done?
It would... It should have.
If it gave me like an affirmative message, maybe I'd like it more.
Well, it was just a lot. It was just a lot. But it's really cool for like accountability and productivity.
Okay. Yeah.
It's called Jell, J-E-L-L.
J-E-L-L.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. So my next one, it goes back to performance again. And it's my favorite topic of all time, module loaders.
Woo!
I just had a miserable time with Webpack 2 and Webpack 1 and NPM 3.
I saw that tweet.
It was an experience. I was trying something, and then one dependency required NPM 3, one requires NPM 2, and then I had accidentally installed Webpack 2 beta at some point, and it was a mess. But disregarding that, one new cool module bundler, it's called Rollup, and they build it as the next generation ES6 module bundler. This is different because Webpack 1 and Browserify and all the current day module loaders still use CommonJS format when they load in bundles or modules. What this means is that if I say import some small function from some file, it imports in the full file, not just the function. And so
I thought that you can export bits of files.
You can export bits of files, but if you have like a library file. Like say you're using, well, that's just a bad example. Say you have
Bootstrap's JavaScript library.
Yeah, some library, and it exports out a bunch of functions, and you just want one function, and so you do the import that curly brace syntax, that one function from this file. It just enables that one function in your file, and as far as dependencies goes, but in the bundle file, it actually brings in the whole library. So it's a bigger file hit.
Okay, so Rollup.
So Rollup is the ES6 version, and so it has this thing called tree shaking, which I did mention.
We had an entire show about this, module loaders.
So tree shaking is great because it just brings in the one function you need. And so this is super important when you have these utility files that export a bunch of functions, and if you just need one function, it brings in only that one function, none of the rest of the files, and then drastically shrinks your full file size. So Rollup is what it's called. A bunch of new libraries are now supporting it. They have this thing called JSNext:main in their package JSON.
So what does it take to support Rollup?
It's just a module bundler. And so if you export your modules in the ES6 format versus CommonJS, so if you say export default whatever, versus the module that exports equals your object or your whatever you want to export, you are now supporting ES6 modules, and you just need a Rollup just needs to say, okay, I'm pointed at your ES6 file, and then I will apply my ES6 logic to your ES6 file, versus what Webpack and Browserify do, which is they transpile ES6 down to ES5 and then bring that file in.
So there's no transpiling necessary.
Yeah, this is just wonderful.
Nice.
Magic. Wizardly.
Rollup.
Sorcery. Rollup. Great.
Okay, my next tool is called CloudSec. It's CloudSec. And it's a website. Basically, this is easy HTTPS for a GitHub page. They do all the work for you, pretty much. You sign up for an account. I must warn that the first time I used this, it was really frustrating because the UI of the site kind of broken. Like there's a few places where it's just like you click buttons and nothing happens. So there was that. But once I got it working and working fine, it kind of is like a wrap around my GitHub site, and I don't know exactly how it works. Probably redirects or something. But they take care of, I don't know.
More sorcery.
This is so bad because I usually hate magic things, but I just need HTTPS. There's so many like web APIs that are inaccessible now if you don't have HTTPS.
Service workers,
like
the magic sauce of the next generation.
Geolocation, yeah. Using the camera.
Yeah.
That was like the straw.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That broke the camel's back.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Just a straw.
It was the straw.
I needed a drink from this drink. I just need a straw. This is my straw.
I wanted, yeah, I need to like get user media. That wasn't allowed unless you had HTTPS. So although it's better for search engine optimization and all that fun stuff, and CloudSec just manages it for you. I think there's a dashboard. I'm pretty sure they're tracking some cool things for me. But yeah, it's free.
Love free.
It's nice.
Yeah.
So if you need HTTPS for your GitHub page and don't know how to get it.
CloudSec. Nice. Cool. Okay, so my next one is not actually front-end related per se, but it's the tools I use to record. We do record this show. And so I use a couple different tools to bring this all together. One is Adobe Audition. So thanks, Adobe, for a great sound product. And so this is what I use to bring in the various audio files we record on and then splice it together and then, boom, export out one MP3
file. Is that much
file.
Better than GarageBand?
Yes. They have different functions, really. GarageBand is more for recording like various multi-track. Actually, no, I guess you could use GarageBand. I haven't heard anyone using GarageBand to record podcasts.
I hate GarageBand. I record my blog post with GarageBand, but it's okay. Only because I don't know any other way.
Okay, so I remember using GarageBand briefly once to do some stuff, and I was like, why would I ever use GarageBand? And just
Audition's
closed it.
A lot better.
Audition's super straightforward. They have a great way of post-processing your audio files, and so if you want to tweak to remove various background noise or to, you know, fix some echo, or maybe one day I'm super loud and you're very quiet, or the other way around, they have this great thing called speech volume leveler, which helps out in that, and so you can kind of finagle with it and fiddle with it to kind of produce a better produced audio.
Nice.
Also with this, I use something called Audio Hijack, and so when we are remote, we use Google Hangouts to record. There we go. I need to hijack the audio from Google Hangouts to this recording device, and so I use Audio Hijack to bring in that stream to one MP3 file. I record to a different MP3 file, and then Audition brings both together to produce the final result. So super cool tool, Audio Hijack and Adobe Audition.
Nice. I knew none of that. I don't do audio. I'm just singing the beginning of the show. Okay, so my last tool that I want to mention is called Spectacle. And this one particularly is what spurred the show because we recorded a show about OS X tools and we forgot to mention this. And I was like, I use this all the time. It's a window management tool that just sits in your taskbar. It doesn't even have to sit there. You install it and then you can use various commands like Option and then the key arrow keys to move things around, or like
control. I use Control Option Command left right.
Yeah, all the time
for maximize left side, maximize right side.
I just like end up spacing out my windows. Like most of the time, I'm just using it for half screen, half and half.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah,
And then full screen too. I will use that sometimes. Yep. But I know that other people use Moom, MOOM. I've heard
Doesn't
of
that cost
a lot.
Money?
Yeah, when I was looking into it, it costs money. And I was wondering why people would use Moom
Spectacle is free and works great. Why would you need anything else?
I'm sure there are benefits to it.
No, not possible. I don't
know. There might be like some special key bindings that you can set up.
Spectacle is my religion. I only believe in Spectacle.
I completely agree. I love Spectacle. Love me some Spectacle. It was one of the first things I installed in my system when I got a new computer.
Yeah, and so that's all I had, tool-wise.
That's all I had for now.
Cool.
Until we come up with more tools...
This is Yuna and Chris signing out.
We'll see you next week.